Hi, I'm Christy Uden, CEO at the Board of Certified Safety Professionals. When you think of a safety professional, what comes to mind? Maybe someone holding a clipboard, telling their coworkers what they're doing wrong? That image is common, but narrowly characterizes the fundamental role of a safety professional. Safety professionals play a critical role in the company's culture, making it a place where people want to work. They help us see the impact of the safe workplace and think of safety as something we want, not just something we need. Join me as we take a dive into the many facets of what safety professionals really do and the impact they have for their organizations. This is Safety on Location.
Welcome back to Safety on Location. My name is Nathan Wilson. I'm the Director of Marketing and Brand Management here at BCSP. I'm joined today by Christy Uden, our CEO.
Hey, Nathan.
And we're here for part two of our visit to L'Oreal and their research and innovation facility out of New Jersey. And in this episode, we step into one of the more unique spaces within their facility, and that would be the salon. So a salon is a place that probably seems familiar to most, but when you really dig in, you realize that this is a working environment with consumers on site and active product testing and really a whole new set of safety considerations.
In this part of the conversation, we explore how safety is managed when public becomes a part of the equation. Mm-hmm. We talk about the EHS 360 in action and really what that means to have safety embedded right in the space, right? How the team plans for everyday work as well as those what if moments. We all know that, you know, that can happen at salons at any moment.
Yeah, exactly. And we also take a closer look at things you may not expect to have to really pay attention to in a salon. You know, things like engineering controls or ventilation or how stylists are trained to work safely within an environment like that.
Right. It's a great example of how safety supports learning, innovation, and trust. All at the same time.
It really is. It really is. So with that, let's get right into part two of our conversation with L'Oreal.
You talked a little bit about the salon. And so there's a little bit of a different dynamic that I was wondering you could walk us through, because you're dealing also now with public or consumers, mm-hmm. right, coming in. And could you talk to us a little bit about what that process is and looks like, and how is that managed?
Sure. So we also have an EHS 360 representative that's part of the salon, which is great. So the different roles that we play as the EHS department, in addition to the EHS 360 members, is when consumers come on site, ensuring that we are safe, ensuring that the process that we have for our different studies, not so much from a product safety, but more from the employee and the consumer coming in. For example, if it's raining outside, they have an umbrella, ensuring that we have bags in case they, so that their umbrella doesn't leak water throughout the facility in the salon, because that can be a slipping hazard. Another thing is that, let's say someone is in the salon and participating in a hair color study and the fire alarm goes off. What do you do? We can't say, oh, we're just gonna sit here and rinse out your hair. No, we have to evacuate. So we have a kit that they take with them and they can rinse out the hair. They have a stool that collapses so that they can sit down on. Everything is captured into a bucket, a container. And so these are the things that we as the EHS department look at, is those what if, and having the EHS 360 member think like that as well, because again, they know their processes. So having them shift their mindset to say, okay, from a safety perspective, how can we make our consumers, when they come in, feel safe?
You've brought us to a kind of like a salon over here, if I'm correct. Could you tell us a little bit more about kind of the room that we're standing in and some of the safety protocol that needs to be put in place and what looks like a salon to me?
Yeah, sure. So one of the things You're right. It looks just like a regular salon. One thing that you'll notice is that we have point exhaust. And this is one of our engineering controls so that anytime we're doing any testing, in particular, if it's a hair color, if it's a dye, whether it's our product or if it's a competitor product or a straightener, that we can use this point exhaust to extrapolate the fumes. And so you don't see that. So inside of your normal salon.
Interesting. So how does that work with the stylists that are in here? Are they employees or contractors? And what's the process for training them on the protocols?
So they do participate in our normal safety training so that they understand the different engineering controls that we do have. What this also does is from a consumer perspective, when a consumer comes in and they see the extra safety measures that we've done to eliminate or even reduce some of fumes that they would normally see or smell when they go to a salon, it really makes them feel, wow, because we've gotten that feedback. Like, wow, you guys think of everything. Wow, I don't smell anything. Is it working? And that's sometimes like, wait, I don't smell anything. Is it working? Yes, we have a point exhaust. Everything is working normally.
So so here's a challenge. If those weren't here, what would be the risks associated with being in a salon that doesn't have the controls in place?
So it depends on what product and what you're working on. Some of it could be a nuisance odor that makes a consumer feel uncomfortable. And that's one of the things that you want to do. You want to make sure that your consumers feel comfortable. And that's one of the things that we have. And another thing that we have is a eye wash station. Because you think if something gets in your eyes, you want to make sure we can attend to a consumer and have them utilize an eye wash station, the same thing as in the laboratories. Now, you probably don't see that in a salon, in particular with hair dyes or anything.
How often is this salon used? And are you testing products then? Is that the main reason for the salon here?
Yes. Yeah, so another good thing about this site is that everyone is in one building. Before, we were in different parts of different buildings and even different states. So the fact that everyone is together, so if a chemist is working on something, it goes through a rigor of analytical testing, micro testing, before it even goes to the consumer for consumer testing. So the chemist can come right here to the salon and see their product in real life and see how it works and actually can give feedback to the cosmetologist as well as interact with the consumers. So that's where you have that really great data.
You were talking the other day about that process because you were talking about the micro scale and then where it kind of goes into more of a macro, you know, pilot almost. Mm-hmm. Could you walk me through that again or for our listeners on how that works and why that's important?
Yeah, sure. So it's important because from a chemist's perspective, they're batching their creative on a smaller scale. And so once they figure out what is it that they want to create based upon so many different things, they go to our pilot and to see whether or not it's able to scale up to a manufacturing. So they're there again, that close interaction. So this is why it's so important to have a space where everyone is together in close proximity. And so that they can see, again, their batch live to see, okay, you know what? I need to tweak it a little bit for it to go to a higher level, higher scale of production. And that's good with the collaboration as well. With the consumers, they see the finished product. But these are some of the things that goes into the different steps. And that's one of the things I love about being in this facility, in this division, because it's truly dynamic. Where else can you go where you can see someone creating a mascara and then to actually see it being tested in a salon or even scale up? And so it's so awesome to be able to have that experience. And that's why I said my day is truly dynamic. It's never the same. And so when you look at even for consumers, we are involved in the different processes. So we do have a sauna and a steam room. So you may think, oh, sauna and steam room, can our employees use that? How can we use that? But it's actually for testing our product. We do images before and after to see how our product lasts. So even from a safety perspective, why my team and I are involved in it is, for example, seeing how much steam is in the room. If someone is in there by themselves, nope, there's a protocol. We at least have to have at least two people. They have a watch on them for SOS in case they're in distress. We have somebody outside of the steam room. We make sure that when they first come out, that there's a mat, anti-fatigue mat, anti-slip mat. And so these are the things that someone may not think about, but us in our safety mindset, we think of every single thing. And again, this is where our EHS 360 member comes into play to help us walk through their processes and to see how can we improve it from a safety standpoint, not only for them, but also for the consumers.
So what would you recommend? So, it's fascinating because it sounds like this is part of the build. You're involved in part of the build to come up with, the mitigation plans. And, in smaller companies, sometimes, what would you recommend to maybe if they don't have a safety professional on site or somebody's just getting into safety, to be able to relay the importance of that type of information? It sounds like you have such a great understanding of it, but is that typical in some of the smaller shops where they may not have your expertise on site?
Yeah, so that is a good point. So what can someone do? I love to say the what ifs. So having someone else that is in particular not even involved in that process to look at a process and then asking those questions, what if this? What if that? What if that? Because you don't have to be an expert to ask, what would you do if this happened? What would you do if a consumer came in and they needed assistance? What would you do if they didn't have the right shoes? So having someone else think of the what ifs, that kind of helps, because sometimes when you're involved in it, you may not think of all of those what ifs. Just like I mentioned earlier about having a cart that has different emergency products in case the fire alarm goes off. They didn't even think about that. But from my perspective, I'm thinking because I'm on the outside, hey, what if this happened? What if this? So teaching employees, regardless if they're not a safety professional, to look at the what ifs. Now, one thing I will caution is that you can go down a rabbit hole. So you have to know when to stop. And then you also have those who are the SME in that area to shift their mindset to thinking, hey, what if we have consumers do this or what if that? Because they see it first.
In the next part of the episode, we're going to shift gears and get a little more personal. We'll hear from Linnea about her journey into the safety profession, how she discovered this field, what drew her in, and why it became such a passion for her. It's a great look at how safety careers can start in unexpected places and grow into something really impactful.
Could you share with us how you got into the safety profession? What inspired you to get into this role?
Sure. I didn't even know that this existed, to be honest. I thought I was going to be an electric or electronic engineer. And so when I started my courses my freshman year in college, I told my academic advisor, I said, oh, this is a little boring. I need something more hands-on. It's just theory until your junior year. And she said, well, there is a program that I think you would like, and you can still have your engineering courses, and it's hands-on. And I said, okay, what is this program?
Like, tell me about this.
Tell me about it. And they said it's industrial technology, and you can have an emphasis on occupational safety and health. And I said, oh, cool, this sounds exciting. So immediately, my courses were hands-on. I had my industrial engineering courses. I had my electricity courses. So it was hands-on. I worked on breadboards and circuit boards because I did that when I was in high school. So I love that aspect. And then I learned more of the industrial hygiene, respiratory protection. I love this so much. And I said, this is my passion. I love this. I love the fact that you're able to be personable and interact with so many different people, and everyone can use safety. And I also looked at it as, hey, job security. Job security. And to the point where I became the president of the American Society of Safety Engineers. That's what it was back then, the student chapter.
Oh, really? Oh,
yes.
That's awesome. A lot of people I hear. Did that help you in your, or how did that help you grow into?
Yes, because at Iowa State University, we had great professors that really, the faculty really encouraged us to be active into this organization, and I learned so much about it. And the fact that after I graduate, there is a professional chapter and where I have the network of different employees who would be in the same field as me, the same profession, that really helped me with getting a job and even learning more about the field and not looking at the field, because I thought, oh, safety, that's just construction and manufacturing. Mm-hmm.
Typical. Yeah, it's a lot of people think, yeah. And so you learned from being part of these groups, you know, how much more? Is that what you're saying? You learned
yes.
about all the other opportunities?
I learned about more opportunities. And, hey, I learned about L'Oreal, the cosmetics company, because I never would imagine that. And that's one of the things that I love about this field, because even in my position, although I'm in general industry, I do have construction projects. So I do have the ability to work on a construction project and deal with general contractors, trades. So I have the best of both worlds. Whereas if I'm just in construction, that's all I'm doing, construction. So that's one of the things that I love about general industry.
So you're also certified by BCSP.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about the certifications you hold and what inspired you to get certified?
Yes, I hold the Certified Safety Professional certification. And what inspired me was actually my first boss here at L'Oreal. He had a certified industrial hygiene. And so he told me all about the certification in BCSP. And because the way he took me under his wings and really developed me for my professional development, I wanted to emulate that. So I wanted to know more about what does this certification entail and what does that do for my career? And even with that, I was able to learn so much.
Do you feel that it's impacted your career?
Yes, I feel that it impacted my career in several folds. One, for me, how it allowed me to grow and develop as a professional, and also the network of professional that holds the same certification, learning their journey, and it allowed me to educate my mentees that I have of the importance of this certification and how it's well respected to hold these certifications.
How Do you have any recommendations or tips for anybody thinking about getting into this profession? What would you recommend to them if they would want to explore this as a career path?
I would definitely encourage someone to get connected to a safety community. And why do I say that? Is because you learn so much, you network. That's where, in particular, if you're not a person that, oh, I'm an introvert, I don't like big groups, but even if you're part of a safety professional organization, there are small groups and you can connect with one person, two people, or three, and that can kind of help you understand what other avenues there are and the different credentials that you can hold in, as we discussed, the different industries, not just construction or manufacturing. Here, even in my career, starting out at a cosmetic company, then transitioned to an organization where we made missile heads. You know, cosmetics to missile heads. And then transitioning again to where we made lenses for glasses. So when I tell that story and tell that to my mentees, it gives them a whole new outlook on the profession, because sometimes they just see the profession as one-minded, one-sided.
In sharing your story, you went through an academic program that started you on this journey. Through that program and graduating, could you tell us a little bit, like, was it difficult to find a position in this, you know, expansive field, or did you find that was actually a pretty easy pathway into the profession?
To be honest, for me, it was a pretty easy path, and I would definitely have to attribute to me being a part of a professional organization early on in my career and networking with others to see what is there out there. Because sometimes if you don't know, then you limit your reach. So if I only, because again, when I first thought about it, I only saw that safety was construction and manufacturing. I had no idea that there was a whole new world. There's other industries and that everyone needs safety. So I would definitely attribute to being part of a safety organization. And you know what? Being active, that's key, because you can be part of an organization, professional organization, but not active. I love giving back. I love doing that. So even now in my career, I even help in on a board to help for safety. Board of directors, I'm part of First Robotic, Mid-Atlantic Robotics. So that's something where I love my passion, because I'm able to look at others and high schoolers and educate them about safety.
If you had to think about just the skills required to be in the profession, you know, you're saying there's the technical piece and then there's the, you know, softer skills, communication type skills. I hate to say soft because they're super important. Is there any certain skill that you think, oh, this is, if you have this skill, this profession could really be something for you? Is there anything that stands out?
Yes, I would say personable. And the reason why I say that is because in this profession, it's about the employees, the people, and how do you connect with people? For example, if you want to ask someone a question, if their face doesn't look inviting, you may be more reluctant to ask them, in particular someone that is at a junior level. So you want to be personable so that someone feels comfortable coming to you. So that someone feels comfortable coming to you. And the other thing is, you have to be transparent and knowing when to pivot. So what I mean by that is, you will have some ideas. Some, hey, you know what? I think we should go this way for this program. I think this is really going to engage employees. But then you, it doesn't work. So you have to let your pride go and say, you know what? We need to pivot. We need to shift to something else. And it's okay. Because one, it makes you look more human and that you're not robotic. And it also, people see that, okay, all right, she's normal. She's normal. They're normal. And taking accountability. Hey, you know what? I thought that was a good idea. But after testing, it's not, let's pivot. Because the longer you stay in something that you know doesn't work, the harder it is to stop it.
As we head into the next part of the conversation, we're going to focus on a question a lot of people in this field wrestle with, especially early on. What do you do when you're new to safety, working at a smaller company, or navigating the role without a lot of built-in resources? Coming up, we'll hear practical advice on how to keep learning, building your credibility, and growing in a profession by using the tools, people, and connections already around you.
We've talked a little bit about getting into the profession, what you're doing now. And would there are a lot of people that are new to the field, right? They've just started out. They might be working at smaller companies. They may not have some of the resources that you have here. What would you recommend for them in order to continue building their knowledge and growing in their field? Do you have any tips for those people listening?
Yes, I would say to get to know the business so that you're able to speak the language and to also see what type of data that you need. Because us as safety professionals, we like data, right? But all data is not the best. And so you want to gather the data that will impact the most to show the results and how to make it succinct and clear to your senior leaders as well as to someone that's on the line. You have to be palatable. You have to be able to know your audience and to understand, okay, for this group, I may need 15 slides to communicate the information that's very detailed. But for this group, I only need one slide straight to the point. So you have to understand the business to know how can you be a great business partner to the network.
Where's a good place for somebody to go to reach out, to gather information that they may not have the knowledge currently? And do you have any resources that you find really helpful?
Yeah, so one of the things is different regulatory websites, if it's something more technical, or reaching out to my network of safety professionals. Because one of the things that I'm a firm believer of is if our goal is to make sure people are truly safe, and even when they leave, they can bring some of those skill sets back home. Oh, I learned how to use a fire extinguisher at work. When I go back home, I'm gonna share this information with my family. If you truly believe that, then we should share information and not be prideful enough to ask for help, because we don't know everything. So it's important to reach out to your network and say, hey, I want to create a program that's on process safety management. I've never done it before. Do you have anything that I can utilize it? And then you take it and then tweak it to your culture.
And how is there any advice on where you find those networks? If you're, a lot of people get voluntold sometimes, right? For the profession and may not know, okay, where do I go? And I appreciate you've talked about some websites and stuff, but access to people, is there anything that you found helpful or that you would recommend maybe as a starting point?
A starting point for me is when I had a mentor. A mentor has really helped me, and I still have my mentor. And although she tells me she's not my mentor, we're family, I still have my mentor. And I think that's it's very invaluable to have a mentor regardless of what stage you are in your career. And so your mentor can help you navigate those things where you may not know where do I go for resources on professional development, or as you mentioned, like soft skills training, or even your HR. Working with your HR to say, hey, this is an area I want to, you know, I'm a little timid. I want to learn how to present better and more effective. Do we have any skills, such as presentation skills training? That's what I did when I first started, because fear of speaking in an audience to a big group, even though I knew my position was forward facing. So how do I tackle that? So reaching out to your, right in your own, it doesn't have to be someone that is in your field. So that's when I reached out to HR to partner for those soft skills, networking.
That's good advice. Because, you know, utilizing kind of what's in front of you is what I'm hearing you say. Sometimes it may be right there and you don't even recognize it.
Let's say for budget, working with your finance department, hey, I have to present, I really need money to get this ergonomic tool. What is a great way to present this to leadership? Talking to finance with numbers. How do I convey these numbers? And so utilizing your own network, sometimes we limit ourselves by just looking just for EHS professionals, but looking at, hey, who else can I look at that's not in my profession that can help me on those areas that I may not be as strong in? So someone always asks me, what does a leader look like? I said, it looks like you. It's whatever you think a leader is. You don't have, like you mentioned, I smile a lot, but that's just my personality. That doesn't mean that every safety professional has to smile as much as I do. When you're confident in you and just really be who you are, then that's when people get the best out of you. And that's when you feel comfortable with your knowledge and with the way you go about doing things and realizing, hey, I don't have to be perfect. And it's okay in recognizing that perfection doesn't mean that it's my value. Mm-hmm. And so you have to look at yourself and as a leader. And so that's one of the things I always say.
No, that's great. That's great advice. I hope whoever's listening, there's probably people out there that do feel like they have to know it all. And so, I mean, I think you've demonstrated here a lot of great information.
And you know what the key is again, I know I say it a lot, it's networking. Hey, you may not know it all, but you know what? I know how to get the answer. I know who I can tap into to get the answer that I need. And that is a strength that people sometimes often overlook.
And that concludes part two of our visit to L'Oreal. And one of my big takeaways from this episode was how much forethought goes into designing all of these spaces. You know, from the salon layout to engineering controls and ventilation, and so many decisions that are made upstream to reduce risk before work even begins. It's a really strong reminder that good safety often starts with how environments are built and not just how they're managed.
And for me, this episode really comes back to the people. You know, we've talked about systems, controls, and processes, but what stood out was how training and shared responsibility bring all of that to life. When everyone understands the expectation and feels confident in what they do, safety becomes a part of the experience. It's not something that's separate from it.
Totally agree. We'd like to thank Linnea Miles for taking the time to walk us through her work and share such practical insight, and really to the entire team at L'Oreal for the warm welcome and giving us an inside look at how safety supports innovation in their organization every day.
And I'd also like to thank you, our listeners. We really appreciate your support. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend or colleague. And if you aren't already subscribed, please make sure to do so you can get notifications of new episodes when they come out.
Right. And if you're a safety professional that would like to be considered to be featured on Safety on Location, you can email us at info@safetyonlocation.com. And make sure, like Christy said, if you're not already subscribed, make sure you are subscribed. We have a lot of really exciting content coming up for the show. And so with that, we will see you next time on Safety on Location.
Safety on Location is a podcast from BCSP with your host, BCSP CEO Christy Uden. Produced by Joel Burgai. Edited by Jared Brio. And editorial support from Brandon Mohoft. If you like this episode, subscribe to receive new episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other podcast platforms. Thanks for listening.